You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The version of our passage today is from Matthew, where he put it at the end of what we've come to call the Sermon on the Mount. In Luke, it's in the Sermon on the Plain, and we also have a clear version of it in the Gospel of Thomas, saying 45. And if we assume that Jesus was a good enough communicator to know that you always leave the most important thing to last, then Matthew's Jesus was really worried about false prophets. The verse right before our passage, wrapping up the whole of the Sermon on the Mount, says, "Beware of the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves." He then explains how to recognize false disciples, our passage for today, and wraps it all up with the story of the foolish man building his house on the sand. In other words, Jesus has just shared a lot of things with us. Blessed are the poor, love your enemies, the Lord's Prayer, that will upset the apple cart of conventional religion. And the people are amazed because Jesus taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. Matthew is making sure that the last thing of the Sermon on the Mount you hear is Jesus saying, "Listen up. There are those who will try to convince you that you shouldn't believe me, and I'll tell you how to reassure yourself that they're not to be trusted. Check out their lives. When we see grapevines, we expect them to contain grapes in season. Fig trees, figs. If there's something else going on..."
Our words of wisdom are from Matthew chapter 7, verses 16 through 19.
"You will know them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorns? Are figs from thistles?
So every sound tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears evil fruit.
A sound tree cannot bear evil fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Ever notice how social media seems to know you better than you know yourself? You stop scrolling for 3 seconds to watch one video about restoring a 65 Mustang. You don't even like it. You just watch. The next thing you know, your feed is full of classic cars, then carburetors, then chrome polish, then somebody arguing about whether a 65 Fastback should have a 289 or a 302. Next thing you know, you're buying
Mustang t-shirts you don't need.
Or maybe you linger over one political rant, one conspiracy theory, one cat video, one sourdough recipe. It doesn't matter what it is. The algorithm quietly takes note and says, "Ha, you seem interested in that. Here's more." Before long, your world begins to shrink until it feels like everybody thinks the same way you do. Everybody's outraged about the same things you are. Everybody's convinced that those people are the problem. It isn't that the algorithm changed your mind overnight. It simply reinforced, one click at a time, what already had your attention. Long before Facebook, TikTok, or Instagram, there was another little experiment that made the rounds on the internet called the shopping cart test. The theory goes that returning your shopping cart after unloading your groceries reveals something about your character. There's no law requiring you to do it. Nobody gives you a trophy if you do. Nobody finds you if you don't. You simply make a tiny decision when nobody's watching. And more often than not, what you do has been conditioned over time. If there had been shopping carts in Jesus' day, I'm absolutely certain there's a chance that this aphorism could have ended with, "You will know them by whether they return their shopping cart or not." Small, repeated choices become habits. Habits become character. Character becomes destiny. In short, don't pay so much attention to what people say they believe. Pay attention to what grows out of their lives. Pay attention to the habits they cultivate, the people they're becoming, the wake they leave behind them. Thorn bushes don't suddenly produce grapes. Thistles don't wake up one morning bearing figs. Shopping carts don't return themselves. Eventually, every life tells the truth. The most dangerous false prophets aren't the ones who fool us. They're the ones who slowly teach us to become like them. That's why Jesus doesn't say, "Listen to what they say." He says, "Watch what grows." Because every teacher, every leader, every ideology is cultivating something in us. The only question is, what? Of course, not all habits are harmless. Some become personal virtues, others become cultural tragedies. And one of the unsettling characteristics of our culture right now is how often we mistake bluster for wisdom, volume for truth, and cruelty for strength. Roy Cohn, Donald Trump's longtime mentor, famously reduced success to three rules: attack, 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 never admit fault, always claim victory. And here's what's interesting. Those weren't simply political tactics. They were habits, and habits become character. Nobody wakes up hoping to become incapable of admitting they're wrong. It happens one compromise at a time, one rationalization, one act of self-preservation. Eventually, the habit becomes the person. The reverse is also true. Compassion isn't an accident either. Integrity isn't a fluke. Courage isn't happenstance. They too are cultivated one choice at a time. Every repeated choice is rehearsing the person that you are becoming. Now, that sounds wonderfully straightforward until life happens. And you and I both know that life has a nasty habit of refusing to cooperate with our plans. For people grounded in a traditional religious mindset where a theistic God above the sky is manipulating events for reasons beyond our comprehension, you often hear folks saying things like, "Oh, it's all a part of God's plan." Well, try saying to a Holocaust survivor that Auschwitz was a part of God's mysterious plan, or tell a Palestinian parent searching the rubble of Gaza for their child's body that this somehow fits into a divine blueprint. At some point, excuses for God become obscene. But more often than not, the despair or the exhilaration of the moment distract us from seeing the threads of cause and effect being woven through our lives. Every wisdom tradition eventually discovers some version of this. Buddhism calls it karma. Paul calls it sowing and reaping. Jesus' vehicle is fruit. Are grapes gathered from thorns or figs from thistles? Look, if you practice hatred, apathy, or greed, it becomes ingrained in us, and the world responds to us accordingly. If we practice awareness or loving kindness, it becomes ingrained in us, and the world responds accordingly. In Galatians, Paul puts it another way. you reap what you sow. In other words, how our lives unfold depends on our outlook, motivations, intentions, and how we treat others. Yeah, there are things that just happen that are the result of other people's issues and the broader universe just being the universe. But how we respond to those events are evidence of, as Jesus would say, who we are at the root, fig or thistle, grape or thorn. There's an old Taoist story about a poor Chinese farmer with just one horse, and, well, the horse escaped. The neighbors come by to console him, saying, "Oh, bad luck." But he shrugged, saying, "Good luck? Bad luck? Who knows?" The next day, the horse returned, leading a whole herd of wild horses. The neighbors are quick to congratulate him. "Good luck!" But he shrugged and said, "Good luck? Bad luck? Who knows?" The next day, while trying to tame one of the wild horses, the farmer's son is thrown and breaks his leg. The neighbors come by to console him, saying, "Bad luck." But he shrugged and said, "Good luck? Bad luck? Who knows?" The next week, the army marches into the village and forcefully conscripts every able-bodied young man to go fight in a bloody war. Ah, but since the farmer's son has a broken leg, he's left at home. The neighbors are quick to congratulate him. "Good luck!" But he shrugged and said, "Good luck? Bad luck? Who knows?" Maybe that's the whole point. Life isn't about waiting for perfect circumstances. It's about working with it. Working with the hand you've been dealt. Working with the diagnosis, the broken relationship, the difficult childhood, the unexpected detour, the opportunity that landed in your lap, the mistake you wish you hadn't made. You can't always choose what happens, but you can choose what you do with it. How we respond to the everyday trials and graces of life become embedded in who we are. It has long-term effects on our lives, on our communities, on our children, and on the world at large. How we hold the world in our eye and heart is what we in the world will become. We have the power to heal, to love, to care, to overcome, and to make compassion visible, whatever circumstances come our way. For some of us, the challenge is even more profound. It's a matter of overcoming our deeply ingrained programming, overcoming our environment. A man found an egg that had fallen out of the nest, took it home with him, and put it in the nest of one of his backyard hens. He had a suspicion what it was, and when it hatched, there was no doubt. It was an eagle. It grew up with the brood of chicks, scratching the dirt for worms and insects, clucking and cackling, even thrashing his wings once in a while. Years passed, and the eagle grew very old. One day he saw a magnificent bird far above him in the cloudless sky. It glided in graceful majesty among the powerful wind currents, with scarcely a beat of its strong golden wings. The old eagle looked up in awe. "Who's that?" One of his chicken companions said, "Oh, that's an eagle. The king of the birds. He belongs to the sky. We're chickens, though, and we belong to the earth." So the eagle lived and died a chicken, because that's what he thought he was. Whenever I'm aggravated with the way a person is or the way I'm responding to a situation, I try to step back and see the bigger picture of the circumstances we're both coming out of, and what we have to overcome to get to a place that manifests our potential rather than our fears or conditioning. And maybe no conditioning runs deeper than the one religion itself has handed us. the Deuteronomic Code. You get what you deserve, and you deserve what you get. We see it all over the Bible. Whole nations are overthrown by enemies because they didn't live up to God's expectations. So God unleashes the unwashed hordes upon the masses to punish them for their misbehavior. This is the overarching kind of primal operating system most people in the world operate under. The poor are poor because they're lazy, they're stupid, they're fill in the blank. The rich are rich because they're smart, hardworking, and God loves them. Get sick? What did I do to deserve this? Inherit money from Aunt Wanda? God must love me. That's Deuteronomy talking, not Jesus. The Deuteronomic Code is a long-standing fallacy that exists for one reason and one reason alone: to prop up our prejudices about others and ourselves. And the best I can tell from paying close attention to Jesus' teachings and actions is that he did everything he could to undermine this mindset. And what did he offer up to replace it? The idea that we, together, have the power to change our lives and the world for the better. Which brings us back to where Jesus began. Every ideology eventually bears fruit. Every theology bears fruit. Every economic system bears fruit. Every church bears fruit. Every sermon bears fruit. Jesus doesn't ask sanctimonious questions like, is it biblical? Is it doctrinally sound? Or does it glorify how great I am? No. The question is, what kind of people, what kind of world does it cultivate? We never know the full impact of a single act of courage or compassion. We simply trust that putting love first has consequences too. As Coach John Wooden famously reminded us, things turn out best for people who make the best of the way things turn out. That's just another way of saying, work with what you've got, isn't it? Of course, cause and effect doesn't only apply to kindness and ingenuity, it also applies to silence. We can make our way through life just looking out for ourselves and making do with whatever comes our way, regardless of the plight of others. When Khrushchev pronounced his famous denunciation of Stalin, someone in the Congress hall is reported to have asked, "Where were you then, Comrade Khrushchev, when all these innocent people were being slaughtered?" Khrushchev paused, looked around the hall, and said, "Will the man who asked that kindly stand up?" Tension mounted in the hall. No one moved. Then Khrushchev said, "Well, whoever you are, you have your answer now. I was in exactly the same position then as you are now. Speak up or stay silent. We are heirs of the results of our actions. Every repeated choice is rehearsing the person you are becoming. And working with it isn't about pretending life is fair. It's about deciding what kind of person you're becoming with whatever life hands you. Working with it doesn't mean making peace with injustice. It means deciding what kind of person injustice is driving you to become. And here's the thing. Eventually, enough people practicing the same habits don't just become a community, they become a culture, for good or for ill. As David Mitchell puts it, our lives are not our own. We are bound to others, past and present. And by each crime and every kindness, we birth our future. Friends, every choice is quietly casting a vote for the kind of person we're becoming and the shape of the world we're passing on to the next generation. The algorithms will keep competing for your attention. Politicians and preachers will keep insisting that black is white and up is down. Every day, the world will invite you to become just a little more fearful, a little more cynical, a little more certain that those people are the problem. Jesus asks only one question. What are you growing? Grapes? Thorns? Figs? Because eventually, every tree tells the truth. And remember, every day, we are planting tomorrow. And somebody's going to have to live with what we've grown. Be well. Hey, and don't forget, if you like what you heard today, buy me a coffee. Thanks, Ryan.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information, or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.